Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Revolutionary Life. You're listening to Revolutionary Life right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're here every weekday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. I am your host, and my name is Gary. And tonight on Revolutionary Life, and if you're new to it, it's just where we look at all aspects of life through a revolutionary lens. And revolution ain't nothing but change. The revolutionary just wants to be on the vanguard of that change. There's some changes occurring in our country right now. And one of those changes has to do with immigration. And if you've noticed, and most folks have been watching the news in our country, they've seen that in our country, the immigration department, the border patrol, are actually separating little children from their mothers and putting them in separate cages, holding pens, and concentration camps, you might call them, They're concentrating them in these camps around the country. The mothers separate from the children. And a lot of people are in uproar about this immigration policy. And so tonight, right here on Blog Talk Radio, right here on Revolutionary Life, we're going to take a revolutionary look at immigration. Now, I entitled this presentation, Immigration 2. Hang on a minute. I entitled this presentation, Immigration 2. I entitled this presentation, Immigration 2. And the reason I entitled it, Immigration 2, is because I've done one of these presentations on immigration before. And you can look back in my archives at previous episodes. And if you search immigration, boom, you're going to see that I've done one. In that one, I simply, in that episode on immigration, I simply talked about the history of immigration into the United States of America. Those of you who know the history of the Irish immigration into the United States, if you know the history of the English immigration and colonization of the United States, of what's now the United States, if you know the history of the Italian immigration into the United States, the Scottish immigration into the United States, the Chinese immigration into the United States, come on, y'all. People have been immigrating into this place for a long time. So what's up? So what's the big deal today? How is this different? Taking babies away from mothers, putting them in holding tanks. They're arresting everyone, even those who are coming to seek asylum. Now check this out. At a country's border, if for some reason you're in fear for your life or something, and you come to the United States and knock on the door, you didn't try to sneak in. You came and knocked on the door and said, I'm seeking asylum. My children, my family, my life is in danger. If you do that right now, today, and you have a child in your arms, that child will be taken from you and put in a cage, and you will be sent into the same detention center with people who they caught sneaking across the border. And all you were doing was asking for help, running from a danger to what you thought may be safety. So they are asylum seekers, they're called. Asylum seekers come to your border the way you would if you needed asylum. And you knock on another country's door and you say, look, where I just came from, don't nobody want to be. I need to get out of there for myself and my family's sake. And I'm asking if I can come into your country for safety. I have nowhere else to turn. And that country, whatever country it is, has the opportunity to say yay or nay, yes or no. Go back to the danger you're running from, or whatever you need to do, but you can't come in here. You, your kids, your family, y'all head on back down the road. Our doors are closed to you. And so maybe in desperation you said, hey, I'm not going to knock on the door. I understand that people are getting into that country by other means. Maybe I will seek out those other means before I go back to the hell that I just left. And so they end up attempting the same people who came for just asylum. Now they end up sneaking across the border because they've been refused a door at the door. Anyway, so in that prison presentation I did, I talked about the labor economic aspect of immigration. When the Italians immigrated into the United States from Italy, when the Irish immigrated into the United States from Ireland, when the Chinese immigrated into the United States, when all these different Hungarians and all these different people from Europe and around the world, actually, wanted to come to the United States put up a statue in New York Harbor that said, "Send us your huddled masses yearning to be free. We ask for the immigrants to be sent. We put out a call for them." What's the difference, guys? That's what you're going to learn tonight, to be able to define policy. What's the difference now? When once we welcomed, we built our little Italies and our Chinatowns, when once we welcomed the immigrant, built a statue beckoning them to come here. Well, you know what I know, if you know that history, if you know that time frame, you know that I know America was entering its Industrial Revolution. Agriculture in the South, factories in the North, coal mines opening up, railroads being built across this country. Workers were needed, lots of them, and cheap labor rules. Slavery in the South, chattel slavery in the South, brought cheap labor and high profits as a result. Industrials in north, up north, paid salaries, paid people and stripped a piece of paper, an IOU, that they could only use at the company store that was owned by the same person that handed them the strip. The IOU, the promissory note. I told you, when they built the railroads across this country, they still say that there's a dead Chinese man for every Thai in the railroad, the international railroad that crossed this country. They had a joke. How do you build a railroad through a mountain? You dig a hole in the mountain as deep as you can. You give a Chinaman a stick of dynamite. Tell him to go into that hole, light it, lay it down, and come out. As the hole got deeper, fewer Chinamen made their way out. But the joke was, the least all you lose is a Chinaman. The Industrial Revolution, we begged them, we asked for them. We brought immigrants in from everywhere. Because we needed the labor. We needed the free and cheap labor on which this country was built. From slavery at its best, at its highest profit, when you share nothing of the value that others helped you create with them, save for upkeep and maintenance, to wages that was so small as to be relevant in cost to industrialists who hired the Irish children. That's right, there were no child labor laws when this country began its industrial revolution. The coal mines had young kids in them, as well as adults. The factories had young children in them and women of all ages. Sweatshops, they called them. In the textile industry in this country. People talk about the Triangle Fire to this day, a textile building filled with women working day and night in the textile sweatshops. because it had no protection, no fire protection. The place caught on fire. They could not get out because they're locked in. And many lost their lives in the Triangle Fire. 1800s, the Industrial Revolution, is how this country built itself. Immigrants, cheap, inexpensive labor, and oftentimes skilled labor. They kept their workers in their little neighborhoods, in their little Italy, the little Italy, the little Chinatown. I told you that in World War II, when most white men were fighting the war, World War II, in Europe, their places for work was not just filled by women, you know, Rosie the Riveter. No. The United States instituted something called the Bracero Program. Bracero Program. And that program flew immigrants by plane into the United States to work from Mexico. To fill those jobs. The Bracero program. It wasn't well funded. Planes have crashed. No record of the people lost, the workers who came over in those planes. But they flew them in. They needed them. They didn't have a problem with immigrants when they need their labor. That's what you have to understand. They had no intention for the immigrant to live here, to try to make a life here. What they wanted from the immigrant was his labor, nothing more. As far as they're concerned, they could stay down in little Italy. They could stay down in little Chinatown. So there always was resistance when these immigrants tried to immigrate and integrate themselves into the U.S., into the society, this WASP-led society. And eventually some of them were able to mix and pass and turn WASP and everything but their, everything from their language to their religion in order to mix and stay in this country. You see, they used to say the sun never set on the British Empire. And the reason for that was because there was a time when wherever the sun was shining, wherever it was daytime, the British owned a piece of that land that it was shining on. Because they owned colonies all over the world, from Asia to Africa to Latin America and to the Americas. Colonies that they ripped resources from to feed the royal families of Great Britain. And these same people that they conquered, oppressed, ripped off, enslaved, now show up in Great Britain, living there, consider themselves British, even though they are people of color, even if they have different languages, even if they're from India, or either they're from Africa, or anywhere the British has stomped, stepped his feet into someone else's land and raped it, the people of that land will often end up showing up in the mother country, in the oppressor's country. And now they act like we don't want these immigrants here. They wouldn't be here if you didn't invade their land and suck their resources out. Too bad people come with those resources. Every minority in Great Britain, every minority in England right now, and everyone in the United States, but everyone in Britain right now can be traced back to a colony owned by Great Britain. What goes around comes around. And now you look at these people as different from your immigrants. So your immigrant sometimes is wanted and he sometimes not. When there's a need for that immigrant, the whole policies, politics, everyone cares. Everyone open arms. Send us your tired, your poor, your weakened masses struggling to be free. That's what it says on your Statue of Liberty. And at the same time, you're snatching babies from mothers for crossing the border, for immigrating today. What happened? I submit to you that the economic incentive is what happened. The need for the labor is what happened. We're through with you. We're technolized, we're robot, everything's robotics. We're automating. We're going to need less and less of immigrant labor. So now we're going to close the border. Bye. But I went to school here, but I was raised here. No, we're going to find a reason to get you out of here. Because it was never meant for you to be here, to live here. We just wanted your labor. So don't be surprised. When politics changes the approach to immigration, it's changed before. I organized farm workers in Southern California. Most of them were Hispanic, of Spanish descent, many of them from Mexico, many of them undocumented, not human, not legal, illegal, undocumented. They didn't have papers declaring that they should be here or why they were here. Some of them came over with green cards, with work cards that allowed them to come over. See, this country issued green cards. What is that for? That allows you to come over for your labor. You see, that's what we want. We don't want you, really. No. That green card is so we can get your labor, so you can work here. For chump change. And when that green card runs out, you're supposed to leave or re-up. And if you don't do either, you're undocumented. You could be deported. So farmers who hired these farm workers, stories go, sometimes they would wait to payday when everyone is lining up. All the Hispanic farm workers are lining up for their paycheck at the end of the week. And the owner of the plantation, the fields, the land that they've been working on, harvesting, the orchards or whatever, will decide to call immigration while they're standing there waiting on their pay. The immigration trucks pull up, and those who are undocumented run. They run. to get away from an immigration agent and being deported back to Mexico or wherever. They run as fast as they can to keep from being captured and deported. And of course, the plantation owner don't have to pay that paycheck out after all that good work, because that worker just took out down through the fields running from immigration. Yeah, they would call immigration on payday. That way you didn't have to meet that payroll. You didn't have to pay that worker after you've gotten their labor and you knew they were undocumented. Just went on all the time. So immigration ain't new to these folks. Their incentive is different. They don't need to labor. So they don't need you. Now, I told you in my title that I would even talk about possible solutions. Rather than taking children away from their mothers, let's say when those people come and ask for asylum, or those people come instead of putting them in detention camps, if you were concerned at all about people and not just your economics needs or the lack thereof, labor needs or the lack thereof, then you could create an area between Mexico and the United States, within the United States even, that is a free travel zone. Let me explain. Businesses, corporations, international businesses, international corporations from around the world can approach the United States borders. And many of them on many states, and including on the many shores, the states that have shorelines where boats approach into the into our waters, have established trade zones. I have one in my city, an international trade zone. What does that mean? That means that corporations from all over the world can come into that zone, and they're effectively not in the United States. But that zone is neutral, and they can do business in that zone. Y'all don't hear me. Y'all don't hear me. Let me tell you something. I was working, a labor organizer I am, I was working in the northwest of this country, Washington, Oregon, and lumber, timber. You know, this is the home of Paul Bunyan, Jack. Lumber and timber and lumberjacks is a big thing up there. Has been for centuries now. Lumber, timber, our natural resources. Well, let me tell you something. While I was up there, they established a free trade zone on the shores of Oregon, Portland, I believe, the port of Portland, or somewhere up in there. They established a free trade zone where a ship from another country could sail right into that zone, that area, unload their goods, sell their goods, and do business without having to declare anything, because officially that zone makes it official that they're not officially in the United States doing business. They escape tariffs that anybody coming to our borders to do business would have to pay, tariff-free, because technically they're not in the country yet. They're in the free trade zone. So this entire land, piece of land, miles of it, has been put together as a free trade zone on the coast of Portland. Now, the impact of that, guys, you have no idea. You see, the Japanese are good at building these factory ships, right? Let me give you an example. There used to be a time when whale oil and the bones of a whale were highly traded, very sought after. There's a great demand for whale oil, for lamps and that kind of thing. And whale bone, all blubber, all that stuff. And so whalers, if you ever read about Moby Dick, that's a novel you can read sometimes about whaling. But these guys would go out on their boats with large harpoons, large spears, and they would spear a whale. And if they hit him in the right place, he would bleed out and die. And they'd drag him back to shore and cut him up and make whale oil out of him or her. So they developed a ship in Japan that not only could they kill a whale, but they could drag the whale aboard ship, cut him up, process him, and put him in cans. That by the time they get to the shore, the entire processing has already been done. The whale is no longer there. He's in small cans, large cans, whale oil and over here, whale bone has been processed and put over there. By the time they hit shore, it's ready for the store. They can put it on the shelf. The ship does all the processing right there on the spot. They don't have to bring the whale back to a factory. The factory is the ship. That's something else, guys. Well, the Japanese took a ship and put a factory on it for processing wood. They don't have a lot of wood in Japan. And they came to the great south northwest, Portland, and they entered that free trade zone duty-free, tariff-free. Because they're not technically in the United States. We made that place for them to come. They brought that ship in there, and guess what they did? They did something nobody had been allowed to do before Bush became president. And that is to sell our natural resources to foreign countries. There were limits on that possibility. The United States' natural resources cannot be just willy-nilly sold to foreign countries. There are limits on selling away our natural resources. Why? Because a tree is a natural resource. And if a lumberjack has a job cutting down trees, that keeps him employed. If a lumber mill, has a job in America cutting up lumber and turning it into 2x4s and toothpicks, and particle board and the like, then people got jobs in the mills, in the lumber mills, in the woodworking mills, in the lumber companies in America. But if you sold the trees directly to a foreign country, you see, it's okay for a foreign country to come and buy the 2x4s because American workers have already done the job and got paid for working them trees down into 2x4s, cutting them down and processing them here in America. All right? And so the Japanese could come along and buy 2x4s. They couldn't buy trees. You hear me? They couldn't buy directly in great quantity our natural resources. There were certain restrictions against that before Bush. But with this free trade zone, the Japanese pulled up a wood processing boat ship into that free trade zone. And trees, freshly cut trees, were brought into that free trade zone. And that ship that the Japanese brought into that free trade zone would take our resources, take our natural trees, raw trees, and cut them up and turn them into, and mill them on the ship. They turned the trees into 2x4s. By the time they got back to Japan, they had lumber, not trees, because the ship processed it itself. Every one of those trees that went to that Japanese ship put a working man in this country out of work. And a meal as a lumberjack, as a truck driver hauling trees. When you sell our natural resources directly to foreign countries, you cut out all of the middle, all of the work that we would have done as Americans in preparing those trees to become lumber. Those jobs are gone. The Japanese went over our heads, put the lumber companies out of business, and bought the raw tree. Why? Because they had a ship that could come freely into the United States in one of these free trade zones and not have to pay a dime to do so. No tariffs, because you're not officially in the United States, right? You in a free trade zone. And while you sit there, they bring you raw lumber, raw trees, okayed by the government to sell you our natural resources. And they process them on the ship. No American worker gets a chance to touch that tree, to cut it, to mill it, nothing. And so lumber companies were going out of business in the Great Northwest. I told you this story. I told this whole story about the Japanese woodship in the free trade zone to point out to you that the governments of these states have every right and ability to make available free zones in their state, where you can come for processing and live like a human being without actually being in the United States. They could do it for corporations and Japanese ships and international traders and ships. And they could do it for people. All they did in Oregon was to make an area available and call it a free trade zone where you can bring your international ships and products into this zone and not officially be and do business and not officially have entered the United States. End of story. If you could do it for the corporations, you could do it for people. If people are seeking safety, you could bring them in to the zone, not send them back to hell or through hell, not take their kids. So, I'm just saying, corporations get a free ride into this country. They take our resources. We make free zones for them to enter and leave and come as they please. But we can't seem to make that possible for people. Immigration was our topic tonight. Donald Trump is closing the door. He's talking about building a wall. You know, we build walls and you put up fences, you raise fences, sometimes to keep things in, not to keep things out. To keep people in, not just to keep people out. You see, the isolation of America is not complete. We have successfully, we've almost successfully isolated ourselves through our president. This country has isolated itself from its allies. Internationally, step one. But we still haven't closed our borders yet. We haven't locked all the doors and the shutters. Now, you would think an enemy country, a country that dislikes the United States, that would like to encroach upon this country, might want to weaken it so that it's easy to dominate. And one of the ways to make it easy to dominate is, first of all, you break all its ties, its allies, the people who might come to its defense. You turn them off, you run them away. And then on the inside, you foment all kinds of disruption between blacks and whites and this and that. So that it's weak internally. And so nobody interferes, you close the doors. You build your walls. And I guess once we are isolated and at each other's throats, we'll see what the goal is of all this madness. But revolutionaries keep their finger on the pulse. So we'll know it. We'll see it. We'll smell it. We'll hear it. We'll taste it before it gets here. Change, that is. So I wanted to do immigration tonight because it was always, it came out to be a big subject today, and some people are pro-immigration, some people are against immigration. Listen, immigration has nothing to do with people coming in this country, taking jobs, or leaving this country with resources or whatever. Most of the borders of your country, of your state, of your city, of your county are arbitrary. Some are natural boundaries, yes. California must has a western boundary called the Pacific Ocean. But the rest of y'all are lines on a map that somebody drew. Your district. These are arbitrary drawings on a map, borders, lines. They can be changed at any time. I told you, corporations have, they have been changed for corporations. They have whole miles of property called free trade zones where international corporations from other countries can come into this country and officially be here. Free. There should be people, there could be land for people to do the same. They're not illegal. There's no judgment process. They live like human beings until they're processed into this country or not. What's with the cages? What's with the isolation of this country from its allies and its internal upheaval? that fits the description of a virus. If you want to really keep your finger on the pulse of what's going on, this country has attracted, has contracted a virus. Much like HIV, the human immune deficiency virus, it has attacked the defense system of the body politic in this country. All its traditions, all its guidelines, all the things that were held together just by agreement have been walked over and stepped on. All the traditions and protocols put in place to hold it together have been unraveled and ignored. Those are its defenses. Its intelligence community is doubted. Its news sources are doubted. So you can't defend yourself with information about what's going on. You can't defend yourself if you don't have information about what's going on, what's really going on. When your information is put in doubt. Right? And so, our country is sick. The defenses, it's like the human immune, the immune system of the body, those traditions and protocols, even the Defense Department, and the intelligence community have been put in doubt. And so the natural defenses of this country have been attacked immediately when this president came to power. The natural defenses, like an immune virus, it attacks your immune system. And once it attacks your immune system, your immune system unable to fight, unable to express itself, leaves the body open for all kind of opportunist pathogens to invade. You money makers, you deal makers, it's wide open, it's wild, wild west up there. Everybody's got the hand out. Signing contracts with foreign countries all over the place. Right? And so, if you really want to see what this country looks like, think of the fact that it is sick. The body politic is sick. The immune system is compromised. That is to say, all of its defenses. See, you don't hear me. The President of the United States of America today has the power, because he's also the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States. He has the peculiar power, the particular power, to be able to tell our entire military to stand down. He can give that order. Where it perceived that we were being encroached upon by a foreign power, one that is not an ally of ours, and that has been a historic adversary of ours. Nobody else has the power to order the military. The Commander-in-Chief has the power. And he could order our military to stand down. Perfect scenario. Internally, we're fighting. White against black, rednecks, women against men, Me Too, everything. externally, we've cut loose from our allies. So where we would have got intelligence from an English spy who heard something that was going down that we should know about, they decide not to say anything next time. The Australian Secret Service, I'm sorry, the Israeli, I believe it was the Israeli Secret Service that had its secret communications handed over to the Russians during their visit to the White House, to the Oval Office. And you don't even remember when they took the picture of the president in the Oval Office with the two Russians ambassadors or whatever, laughing and grinning. That picture came from a Russian news outlet. They met in the White House Oval Office, and you didn't know about it and wouldn't have known about it. Isolate the United States from its allies, get it fighting each other internally, cause all kind of turmoil with immigration and everything else. And while it's weak and ain't paying attention, we won't get back to that question about, didn't the Russians interfere with our elections? And aren't they still doing the same thing? And have we done anything to stop them? That's not even on the agenda, man. President Trump maybe two weeks ago now, announced that he was going to use his own personal phone. It was too much of a hassle to use the secure phones. President of the United States talking on a regular old everyday cell phone. His own personal cell phone. Just too much of a hassle. This is the man who wants to secure our borders. And he won't secure his conversations. Or certain conversations. All of my presentations, because we take a revolutionary lens at the things that we're looking at, point out that there's change occurring and change needed, by the way. Change is occurring. Our government is in the midst of a change. The Republican Party is like a fan club of the president. The Democratic Party is like an old mud cat. Down south, we got these catfish who wiggle themselves a little place down in the mud, and they sit there and wait for something dead and dying to come by. Scavengers. You know, unlike a bass, you know, the bass fish will strike a shiny watch if you swing it through, if you throw it in the water. He's more predatory, I guess. More of a hunter. The old mud cat sits in the bottom and waits for something dead and dying to float by. That's what the Democratic Party is. It thinks Donald just thinks this country is going to fall into its lap because everybody doesn't want Donald Trump. 2020, blue wave. They think they don't have to do anything but sit back and wait for the apple to fall. My goodness, Trump going to make a fool out of him if they don't take this government. And I don't think they will. I wanted to do immigration tonight since it was all over the news and people talking about it. But I call it immigration too because I've done one before where I got a little bit more into the economics and the history of immigration in this country. But by the same token, I wanted you to understand its fundamentals. It's about labor. It always has been. There would be no black slaves, enslaved people in the United States of America, European, in the United States of America, in the Caribbean, in South Central and South America, were not for the need for slaves. Free, cheap labor. That's all slave is. Free, cheap labor. And that's all immigrants represent to this country. There's no welcoming you, black brothers. If you welcome Italians when they came here like brothers, there wouldn't have to be a little Italy. They could have moved into your neighborhood. There wouldn't have to have been a Chinatown. But you restricted them from moving into your neighborhoods. Because all you really wanted was their labor. You didn't want them. You called them WOPs. Black people didn't think that up. WASPs thought that up. And so tonight, that's my piece on immigration tonight, guys. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. This is Revolutionary Life, where we look at every aspect of life through a revolutionary lens. Now, my show is a call-in show. And so I always set aside a part of my show for those who'd like to have a comment or a question. All right. And so I'm going to make this time what I call your time to shine. My phone number is area code 714-816-4765. That's 714-816-4765. You're listening to Revolutionary Life, right here on Block Talk Radio. We're here every weekday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's a great way to end your night. And you never know what the subject might be. It's So if you see a little follow sign on your site, click that follow sign, and you might get a heads up on what the subject is going to be that day. You might. Sometimes they're spared the moment with me. But I wanted to bring out something on immigration today, and I did. But I did a whole, I called it immigration too, because I have a whole other episode where I go much more in depth into the migrant issue and program and the crossing of borders and the drawing of them. I pointed out to you just a minute ago that in Oregon, corporations, international ones, not American ones, are given wide berth in something called a free trade zone to land their ships in this country and do business in that zone and not be officially in the United States. No taxes, no tariffs, free trade zone. And they come into that zone and do business, some of which take jobs away from Americans. Like when they buy raw lumber and process it on their ships right there in that zone and take that lumber back to Japan, rather than allowing us to mill it and buying the lumber already milled. They're buying the trees, our natural resource. And they can do that without tariffs in the free trade zone. But we can't do that for people who want to come into this country and do business and live or work or go to school or be safe from whatever havoc they're running from. You see, in the Ukraine, a part of the Ukraine was a country, an area called Crimea. The people, the Russians used to own all of that. Crimea, the Ukraine, all of that. Part of the Soviet bloc. Until all that broke up and those people declared their independence. Ever since then, it seems that Russia's been trying to get back all of those countries underneath its control. The Crimea has a lot of ethnic Russians in it, even though it's attached to a country called Ukraine. And so, the people of Crimea, organized by Russia, believe that they are ethnically Russian, and some of them start a movement to attach the Crimea back to a part of the country of Russia. And it cites its ethnic and historical ties to the Russian culture and people and history. And it felt more an affinity with Russia and its culture than it did with the new country of Ukraine, independent country of Ukraine, which it was currently attached. The Soviet Union sent its military into Crimea on a mercy mission to help those Russian, ethnic Russians, declare their independence from their separation from the Ukraine and their joining with Russia, so that there wasn't any incidents. It seems the Russian army walked in to ensure that these people could safely exercise their right to leave the Ukraine and join Russia, given their strong ethnic history with Russia. And with the Russian military backing these groups, the Ukraine was pulled away from, the Crimea was pulled away from the country of Ukraine and pulled under the purview of Russia, the country of Russia. And the Ukraine protested, but hey, were they ready to go up against the Russian military, who, of course, entered into Crimea with their tanks to protect those Crimean ethnic Russians who simply wanted to be a part of the historical Russian countries that they have an affinity with. Well, if that's okay, you remember Hitler in World War II claimed that the people of the Sudetenlands, which should have been part of Poland, should have been part of Czechoslovakia, of those countries. But they said they had an affinity with the Germans. Their history was German. Their ethnic was, they were ethnically German. And they wanted to be reunited with the country of Germany. They wanted to leave their current country of Czechoslovakia. And so the Germans sent their military in on a mercy mission to protect these ethnic Germans in this other country, who decided that they really wanted to be Germans and be a part of Germany and leave the country that they now belong to, a part of. And the German military, of course, was just there to make sure these people could exercise that right. And the Sudetenland was annexed into Germany with the protection of the German army. The reason I'm telling you these stories, guys, it's because the people along the border that we're building a wall, along the border of the United States and Mexico, southern Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Baja, California, Southern Cal, let's just say, well, California in general, all of that today is filled with Hispanic people and many from Mexico. New Mexico is a state of the United States that has Spanish council meetings in its government. All of these states that border Mexico have an ethnically Mexican population. They relate to Mexican history in the country of Mexico, and they relate to its ethnic culture. So wouldn't they be in their right to ask the Mexican army to assist them because they don't want any trouble, but they'd like to move New Mexico back to the purview of Mexico, the country they have the most ethnic history and relationship and affinity for? Crimea did it. The Sudetenlands did it. Why shouldn't the Hispanic people along the border in many of the states that used to be Mexico, who are culturally Mexican, who are ethnically Hispanic, and feel an affinity with the country of Mexico more so than they do with the United States? And should they propose to take New Mexico and Arizona and Tejas back to Mexico, the way the Crimeans felt they needed to be back with Russia, their ethnic relationship called for it? Just an idea. My lines are open. My phone number is 714-816-4765. That's area code 714-816-4765. It's your time to shine. And you're listening to Revolutionary Life right here on Block Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gary. And as I said, we're here every weekday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's a good way to end your night. Hopefully it's an informative way to end your night. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. Be here tomorrow night at 10, and I'll be here tomorrow night at 10, where we do our Friday wrap-up of presentations that we've done through the week. So if you missed the presentation, if you didn't get the whole thing, if you wanted to hear it again or get the point or whatever, or you still had questions from it that you didn't ask before, remember we got a call-in show here, then tomorrow I'll be going back over the subjects that we spoke to briefly and hitting on those points that we were trying to make there. And if you still had questions or comments from those past episodes that we're going to review tomorrow, then you can bring them up then. Again, thank you for listening in. I appreciate it. And I hope I see you tomorrow. I'll hear from you. I hope you hear me tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. I leave you as I always do. Come here into the now, into the moment, into the present, and stick around here as long as you possibly can. You will find that's where your power is. Not in your thoughts, not in your mind. That's virtual reality. That's going on in your head, the past, the future. All mental stuff. Come here, into the moment, into the now, the things that you can smell, taste, touch, and feel. Your answers are there, not in your head. And you'll be fearless and have no doubts, none. And I'll see you tomorrow night. Good night, and thanks again for listening in.
Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
This is not a drill. Is that all you got?
Let's begin. What up?
Oh, shout.